Welcome to Yak Babies, the only podcast on the internet sponsored by Dr. Pizza's Pizza Pal, your friend, the saucy end. My name is Aaron. I'm here with my personal pals, Dave.
Hello.
Brick.
Hello. I'm missing Dr. Pizza in my life.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
It's been so long. It's been how many years since we had Dr. Pizza? And I think about it constantly.
At least one.
So good. At least one. I think when Anchorman 2 came out is when we watched it.
That's a point in history that is not anchored for me.
Yeah, really.
That could be anywhere from 2010 to 2020.
I want to say it was like 2014, so it was like 6 years. And yeah, I still think about
Aaron
it.
Aaron so only measures time in Will Ferrell movies.
What was that, like 2.5 Get Hards ago?
2.5 what?
I can meet you downtown at about 3 other guys. How about that?
Yeah.
We also have Old Irish Nico here.
Hello.
There he is.
The Yak Babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
This episode was inspired by our mailbag episode. We had mail from a listener, podcast pro fan Bonnie, who asked us about, or told us some stories about her brushes with literary fame, which were really cool, and asked us if we had any similar. And so we would do a whole episode about it to see what our various sort of encounters with literary celebrities, sort of glitterati in the literary world are. I have very few. I did write to a writer whose name I've lost now, Cynthia something, who wrote a series of novels called the first one was called Jackaroo. They were about like kind of a Robin Hood character in sort of a middle ages kind of setting. I liked them a lot when I was in like sixth grade. Wrote to her and she wrote back and she was very nice, but it was like one or two letters. I think it was maybe just one letter, so it wasn't exactly a detailed correspondence. And then
Cynthia Voigt,
yes, that's right. And then I went to a reading and a book signing from Dean Wareham, who is from the band Galaxy 500, and Luna, who I really like, both those bands. And he wrote a memoir called Black Postcards, which is very good. And I went to the reading at Booksmith and got him to sign it afterwards. And I was in line. I wanted to say something to Dean Wareham to make him think I'm cool, obviously. So I didn't want to come up with the same usual just like bullshit of like, oh, I like your band, whatever. I want to say something meaningful, though he would remember me with. So I thought, oh, I remember reading a while back that when Galaxy 500 was getting started at Harvard, they borrowed their drum set from Conan O'Brien, who was also at Harvard at the time. I was like, great, I'll ask him about Conan in college and I'll be very funny and cool. So I go up there, my book, he's like, what's the name? I said, Aaron. And I go, hey, I have a question for you. He's like, yep. And I'm like, so what was Conan O'Brien like in college? What was it like to be like in the dorm with him? And he was like, he was funny. What would you expect? And I was like, yes. Okay. So I slunk away into my corners, like
humiliated
by this rock star. Exactly. Felt like an idiot. Was an idiot for sure. So I definitely earned my dressing down from Dean Wareham. What about the rest of you? What have you done?
You should have made him a cake.
Never gonna live that down.
Yeah, and also Aaron, don't forget your letters to Green Lantern. Doesn't that count?
Sure. Green Lantern has not written a novel just yet, but when he does, I'll be first in line to read it.
Couldn't he just snap his fingers and he could be the novel.
He could use his ring to turn him, well, he couldn't turn himself into a novel.
You could read Green Lantern.
Wait, what?
Can't he just turn into anything?
No,
isn't that his
power?
No,
he has a ring that can create anything.
Create a novel.
He could. I don't think he could turn himself into it. Like, he would still need to be the, maybe.
Could he create a novel with,
I suppose,
like, a story that he doesn't know?
Did it make you feel worse knowing that it was literally effortless for him to return a letter to you?
Yes.
Like, he could have just made a response appear in your hand. It took him more mental energy not to respond to you than it did.
Hey, he's a busy guy. I understand. It's hard to be a space cop. What can I say? Yeah, let's hear your stories of literary fame. What else you guys got?
Well, I got a couple that you guys are already familiar with.
Yeah.
Both of them horrifying in their own ways. I interviewed George Saunders for a newspaper in Texas. So he was in Austin when I lived there and we got together for brunch, which was super cool. You know, I've always really liked his work. And he's like, in person, he's like so funny and intelligent and a really great conversationalist. So I felt myself just like trying to keep up the whole time.
To be cool.
And feeling like I was already sounding stupid. And then our food came. And in my defense, it was a huge piece of toast. But when I get to that point in the recording, I cringe really hard. Like, my asshole closes up tight because I can hear myself, like, and I know it's coming, And you, like, I feel like I can hear the plate being set down, and I say, "Wow, look at the size of that toast." And Saunders is like, "Yeah, it's big, I guess." He's probably like, I cut him off from talking about like literary theory or like, you know, to talk about how big the toast is. So that was really fucking humiliating.
The most bumpkin thing to be impressed by.
Oh, yeah. It's like something totally. It's like something one of his characters would say.
What are you going to do if that does happen?
I should cut that out and send it. We can run it. Because I still have that recording. Soundboard. Yeah, for sure.
That's the best part is that you recorded that shit.
So look at this.
Humiliating. Yeah, send that to me.
Look at the size of that toast. Like, as soon as I said it, I was like, fuck, what am I doing?
Look at the size of that toast. Golly, Mr. Saunders. Yeah. Wow.
I'm going to watch you eat, that. Thing?
Yeah. I didn't even know they could make toast that big.
That's going to take a lot of butter. So, yeah.
Holy shit, this has to be an essay somewhere. Like, there's something worth working with that. That's so fucking funny.
I might have to listen to that whole thing again. I'm sure I said plenty of other idiotic things.
George Saunders and the giant toast.
Oh, Jesus. So that was one.
Oh, so good.
There's another where I run a story contest for a different publication in Texas. And so 10 years ago for the inaugural contest, we wanted to get like a really great guest judge, like someone legendary in Texas. Larry McMurtry was our first choice. And I was thinking there was like not even a 1% chance that it would happen. But somehow it did. I got in touch with him through, I think I emailed somebody at his Archer City bookstore fortress compound. And so one day he called me and I told him briefly what it entailed, and he said, yeah, I'll do it. Cause he and the magazine had a relationship already. So he was in. So immediately we started promoting it. Then we opened the contest and stories just came flooding in because so many Texas writers, you know, he's like a god in Texas.
Right.
So we got like immediately many dozens of submissions, and eventually I think almost 300.
Wow.
So a couple of weeks after that, after the contest opened, we sent a photographer to Archer City to take some photos of him for the issue. And he also had an essay in that issue. So it's not like this came out of the blue to him, but the photographer, while she's taking the photo, says, "We're so thrilled that you're going to guest judge this story contest." And he looks at her and he says, "I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not judging any story contest." So fuck. When I got that news, that was my asshole tightened really hard that time too. I mean, we'd already taken in, you know, hundreds of dollars,
right?
To have to turn around and say, "Just kidding, Larry McMurtry is not judging this contest," would have been just awful. So it was like the worst phone call I've ever had to make. Although I remember feeling like real hot shit because I had Larry McMurtry in my contacts list.
Right.
So I call him, he picks up, and he's like, he's kind of a crotchety old guy, and he kind of grumbles about it. But finally he says, "If I said I'll do it, I'll do it. Whatever, just send me the stories." So that was a huge relief. And I sent him the stories. He had to read 5 stories and choose a winner. And rather than call me back, he sent me a typewritten letter, which went something to the effect of, "Dear David, I choose," and then it's a story title, and then Larry. And that's it.
As if to say, leave me alone.
Yes.
Never ever talk to me ever again.
Yeah. This chapter.
Here's the one that I picked at random.
This chapter has ended.
Right. There will be no more correspondence between you and me, David.
Yeah. So both of those experiences were awful in different ways, but also super cool.
Yeah. I mean, having the encounter in the first place is still worth it.
Sure. Right.
Nico, what about you?
I guess the closest I've ever gotten to literary fame, this was maybe 25 years ago. I used to really like the comic strip Bizarro that ran in the paper. You guys ever read that?
Yeah. It's like low rent Far Side.
Yeah. And so I got the guy's book and I went to like my local Borders when he was in town. And I think he was from where I grew up, I think. But anyway,
yeah.
So I went there to get it signed and I was the only one there. And I was the only one that had been there. And so he was like desperate to talk to me. And I was like super awkward and 15. It was like, I wasn't prepared to like have a conversation. I just want to get the book signed and fuck off. Like, I can't handle this. There were like three people there too. Must have been like his agent or the manager of the store or whatever. Yeah. So he drew like a little drawing on it and everything. I was like, that's cool. Nice. All right. Bye.
Oh man, that hurts. That's brutal.
Yeah, sucks for that guy.
I think it's still running, isn't it?
Pretty good about you. What do you got?
When I was in second grade, we read all of E.B. White's books. Well, I don't know if we read all of E.B. White's books. We read, you know, the E.B. White kids books that everyone reads. So this is Charlotte's Web, Stuart Little, and then Trumpet of the Swan, which was, you know, the big one. And then we got all ready because we were going to have a very special literary guest. It became a whole thing. We had to plan the welcoming. We had to get our like questions together and all this. And then when the time came, the guest showed up and it was none other than E.B. White's secretary, who was like this 90-year-old woman. And she told us some stories about what it was like to like work in an office in the 50s. She probably talked about the book too. I don't remember. And that was really exciting. That's my story.
And we should say... former secretary, because he was dead by that point.
He was very much dead. I didn't know, but yeah, he was all kinds of dead. By, I mean, probably. When did he die?
Got to be in the 60s or 70s, right?
Oh, yeah. Then he was very, very dead. Yep. I mean, she's pretty old, so she's probably dead now, too.
We can only hope so. It was near this.
Yeah, it should be 130, I guess. So that was my story. And then the little coda to that story that I remembered.
Oh, wow. 85. So
still dead. Yeah, this would
still dead, this, but closer.
How old are you in second grade?
8.
This would have been right around
like 6.
Yeah, 89 or 90. So he was recently dead, I suppose.
Recently dead. Nice.
So the coda to that story is the librarian from my school. So he had to drive by our house. So my school was like on a road perpendicular to the one that I grew up on, and then we had to take this kind of parallel. We had to take this perpendicular road called Union Wharf Road. The bus took it every single day. No wharfs near there, so I don't know what that was about. We drove by my librarian's house every day, and she had a little farm, and it was a yak farm or some kind of hairy steer. So little did I know that very early encounters with yaks.
You were a yak baby.
And that is, so that was really my first brush with literature.
The omen that would become the podcast 30 years in the future.
When we were coming up with names, and then the one that was a joke at the bottom was the one we ended up keeping.
Yeah. Those are all pretty good. And also, I feel like they're nice and characteristic. Like, there's awkwardness, there's shame, there's loss of face in these stories. This fits our podcast very well. Well, those are our brushes with literary and other fame. We want to hear about yours on Twitter at YakBabies. Talk to us there. Let us know what encounters you had. Who was nice? Who was not so nice? Who'd you get drunk and play pool with, etc.? Let's hear it. Also, email us at yakbabiespodcast@gmail.com with those stories as well. You can rate us on Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars and tell us why you love the show so much. It'd be great. And tell others. That's another thing you can do. Spread the word. Tweet about us. Or tell a friend who you think has good taste in literature, who has bad taste in literature, or whatever, to listen to this podcast. And spread the word like that. Also, for $1 a month, find us on Patreon, patreon.com/yakbabies, and get access to our secret bonus podcast. It's a lot of the same things here, but with a more sinister edge. I mean, not sinister, it's just like grosser, but it's fun. There's games, there's bro to bros, yeah. There's doing power hours, we're telling stories and secrets, it's all good stuff there. $1 a month, and you get all that. Until then, yakbabies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all their loyal listeners and especially their patrons past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, and William Howard Taft.